Welcome to the podcast of the Student Christian Movement. SCM is a community of students, past and present, and it is community that is at the heart of who we are and how we do things. Based in the UK, our vision of SCM is as a generous community, expressing a lived faith in Jesus Christ where social action meets prayerful devotion. We seek to be both a radical voice for equality and justice, and a safe home for progressive Christian students. Hello and welcome back to the SCM podcast. So today I'm joined by Ellie McLaughlin. So Ellie, thank you so much for joining us today. I would like to start if you could just share a little bit with us about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm Ellie McLaughlin. I work as a lecturer in theology at Ripon College, Cuddesdon, just outside Oxford. And I'm an associate member of the Faculty of Theology and Religion at the University of Oxford. My research is mainly on Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and I'm interested at the moment in thinking about his theological anthropology in relation to disability theology. So that's where I'm going kind of at the moment with my research.
Very good. I think it's a very interesting place to be looking. Of all the reading that I've done so far, I think disability theology is something that I've not came across as readily when it comes to Bonhoeffer scholarship. So I think it's a very necessary and worthwhile field of study to be looking into. But for you, when it comes to Bonhoeffer and your encounters with Bonhoeffer, what drew you to his theology and work in the first place?
Well, I think it was honestly partly through chance that I first came across his writing, because it was one of those classic moments in an undergraduate career when you suddenly think, oh, I have to pick my papers for next year and I don't really know what to pick because there's so much choice. And one of the options that I had was to do a whole term studying one particular theologian. And the faculty provided us with a very long list of a whole load of theologians that we could choose to focus on for one whole term. And I was totally overwhelmed and had no idea where to start. And so I went and spoke to a couple of friends, and one of them just happened to say, oh, well, you should do Bonhoeffer because he's not terribly well known, and therefore you might, you know, be in a smaller class, and therefore you might get a better learning experience. And I thought, oh, well, that's a good reason. And so I chose Bonhoeffer and had a wonderful, wonderful term of learning about his work. And the way that the course was structured was that we got to read pretty much a whole book of his every week. So it was a really good in-depth, really drilling down into his work for a whole term, which I absolutely loved. And then I was hooked.
Yeah, it's amazing how the different stories of how people actually come to engage with Bonhoeffer. For some, it's through his writings. For others, it's through the witness of his actions in Nazi Germany at the time. And there's such a variety of experiences when it comes to how people engage with Bonhoeffer and how they came to him in the first place. But the first time that I engaged with some of your work around Dietrich Bonhoeffer was through your book called Unconscious Christianity and Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Late Theology. So to start with, what does Bonhoeffer mean by unconscious Christianity, and where do we come across it in his work?
So it's much easier to answer the second part of your question. The first part of your question is quite tricky. So let's start with the second bit. Bonhoeffer only explicitly mentions this term in the texts that we have four times. So he mentions it in his Ethics, but only in a marginal note to the side of his essay Ultimate and Penultimate Things. He mentions it in his fiction that he writes when he's in prison. And some of his characters, he describes them as unconscious Christians. So we get some character development of people who he thinks of as unconscious Christians. He mentions the term in a letter to Bethge, where he tells him this theme of unconscious Christianity is preoccupying me more and more. So we can tell that he's thinking about it and trying to get to grips with what he thinks about it, that he doesn't have a pat answer as to what it is. And he also mentions it in some notes. When he was in prison, he was planning to write a book. And we have in Letters and Papers from Prison, we have some of his notes that he made for the plan of his book. And he mentions unconscious Christianity in relation to Matthew 25 and some other biblical texts in those notes. So we only have four kind of scraps of text in which this term appears. And so from that, I think the work that I was trying to do in that book was to basically be a detective and try to work out, okay, what does he actually mean? And I think that what we find is that his understanding of the term develops over time, but that at its core, he's trying to articulate this idea that there is some kind of valid Christian expression, recognizable Christian life, that is happening outside of any kind of confession, that's happening outside of any kind of institutional church. And that he's saying, you know, look, we can recognize Christianity or faith or however you want to phrase it out there in the wider world is I think what he's getting at. And then some of the qualifiers kind of mutate and develop over time as he works on it, works on the idea.
I think it's pretty amazing to be able to take a couple of scraps like that and then end up writing a whole book on it. But I think it really does speak to the theme that we've brought up with a lot of other theologians that have been on the podcast so far, which is this whole idea of thinking alongside or with Bonhoeffer, that his theology is not static, and in the same way that it develops throughout his life, and the way that his life was cut short by the horrors of the Nazi regime, we begin to think about where his thought could have went afterwards, and also what his ideas mean in terms of its implications for social teaching and other aspects of theology that maybe he didn't think through during his lifetime. I don't know if you want to speak to that at all.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that there are things that we can, if you like, glean from the texts that we have, that, you know, we have to be very upfront in saying, we're not saying that Bonhoeffer intended to absolutely say this, right? But here's what I see, here's what some other scholars see as coming out of his work for us in our context. And I think as long as we're very clear about what's in the text and what we think could be meant by the text and the difference between those two things, then they're both really helpful and valid exercises to do with his work. Because I think, you know, that it would be a shame to think that all these theologians, not just Bonhoeffer, right, but it would be a shame to think that all these theologians who've left us such rich texts kind of have to just stop in their own historical period and can't speak beyond their lifetimes. So as long as we're clear about what it is we're doing, I think I kind of think about it as enabling them to speak beyond their context in some way.
I mean, we see a similar sort of thing happen with the biblical text, and we think of how difficult it is to apply like authorial intent to someone like Bonhoeffer, who lived like just under a century ago, and then compare that to 2,000-4,000 years ago, having these texts and traditions that have been passed down, and how those still are reinterpreted to have new meaning and relevance for us today. So I think it's an important work to be doing. And one of the other themes that comes up in Bonhoeffer's work, and it's probably more widely known than the concept of unconscious Christianity, is that of religionless Christianity. So what would you say are the kind of differences between those two? Because when you first hear them, they may seem fairly similar.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think religionless Christianity, there's obviously the element of choosing Christianity, but without maybe what Bonhoeffer would call the trappings or the garment of religion or religiosity, he also sometimes refers to. So I think for Bonhoeffer here, what we're talking about when we're talking about religion, he uses the word religion in quite a lot of different ways in his work. So I'm being really specific here and just talking about religion in this particular context of religionless Christianity. When he's using it in this sense, he's talking about the kind of empty piety that people can adopt, the kind of the rituals that some people fulfill because they're trying to be Christ-like, but that others fulfill just because they think it maybe looks nice, or they think it maybe will get them points in some way, in some, you know, point system of holiness. And particularly what he's kind of binding up in that phrase religion, religiosity, is this sense of relying on a type of God who we can call to, and that God comes and like gets us out of the situation that we're in. And that type of God, that vision of a particular type of God for Bonhoeffer in his letters and papers in this period, is really tied up with his idea of religiosity, religiousness. So religionless Christianity is trying to be a faithful disciple of Christ without calling out to relying on this God of the gaps, this kind of deus ex machina that's going to come fly out of the wings and sort everything out in our own problems. So that's religionless Christianity, if that makes sense. Contrasted to unconscious Christianity, which for Bonhoeffer isn't — this word intentional is a bit of a slippery word — but isn't intentional in any way. It's these people are not trying to be faithful disciples of Christ, but through their living, through how they are in the world, they are sharing God's suffering in the world, is one of the ways that he puts it. So people who are willing to, for example, take on the guilt of others, suffer alongside others, people who are — the phrase trying to be good seems rather banal, but he uses this term, the good and good people, in reference to unconscious Christianity, because he's trying to say these people are kind of being Christ-like in the world. They're doing good things. And so the church can recognize a kind of kinship with those people. Now, obviously, I'm sure many people listening will have already seen the massive red flag that's happening here, which is, you know, the risk of paternalism, colonization that comes with that idea, right? The idea that the church can say, hey, I know that you people are Christian, even though you don't think you are. You know, here we are telling you, hey, you're unconscious Christians, even though, you know, these people might not want that label. So it's definitely not a concept that we can just cart into the 21st century and go, hey, let's call these people unconscious Christians. However, thinking about that term in Bonhoeffer's own context colours it in a really different way. So I think he's trying to say the church in Germany is in crisis, the whole of Western Europe is in crisis, the faith of so many people is in crisis. Here's something that we can hold on to. There is goodness in the world. There are people trying to do good things in the world, and we can see God in action in those people. So for me, it's very much a pastoral type of formulation that he's getting to here. And we have to be really careful if we're going to think, you know, with or beyond Bonhoeffer and take his categories into today. I think unconscious Christianity is one of the ones that we have to be incredibly careful about, or even perhaps just leave behind in the 1940s with Bonhoeffer.
Yeah, I like what you were saying about religionless Christianity at the start there, of like how it's this almost deus ex machina, like trying to reject that whole idea of religion where God is almost like a slot machine or a video game, where if you put in the right inputs that you'll get the result that you want out of it. And then that similarly the unconscious Christianity is that pastoral aspect is moving away from this mechanistic understanding of God to this caring and loving understanding of God, which is particularly powerful, especially when you consider things like the story of the Good Samaritan, which you can see a lot of these ideas of the unconscious Christian within, I suppose. And as you've already mentioned, Matthew 25, where it talks about all of this as well, where there's are people that act in such a way that is Christ-like, that although they themselves might go that that's not me doing anything special, that's not me acting in a religious way, that it's in some way revealing an aspect of God's character and likeness. So I think that's really powerful. And I think that it comes up in the thought of other theologians as well. And you mentioned this in the book, you have mentioned Karl Rahner's idea of anonymous Christianity. Karl Rahner being a very prominent figure in 20th century Catholicism. So when you discuss the differences there between unconscious Christianity and anonymous Christianity, where do you see similarities? Where do you see differences? Can you talk a little bit about that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. And even the names are kind of similar, right? Unconscious Christians, anonymous Christians. And there is a lot of similarity if you were to just look at, say, a person that Rahner would talk of as an anonymous Christian and look at a person that Bonhoeffer would categorize as an unconscious Christian. They might kind of look the same. However, the thinking that's brought both of these theologians to articulate those ideas is quite different. So for Rahner, what we have going on is these two contrasting paradoxical ideas, right? So on the one hand, you've got the idea that Christian faith is necessary for salvation, and Rahner really thinks that. However, at the same time, he also really thinks that there is a universal salvific will of God's love. And so you get these two things kind of hurtling towards each other, and they're contradictory. And so out of that, in his theological investigations, he writes that he thinks all humans have the capacity to be members of the church. And he talks about, because of the fact that everyone has the potential capacity to be a member of the church, he says there must then be degrees of membership. So for him, there's this idea of a hierarchy of being a member of the church. And he talks about it in terms of the extent to which people are ready or happy to accept what he calls the fullness of the Christian faith. And so he seems to think some people are really going to be, you know, on that and affirming it, absolutely. And some people maybe won't be quite so much. But for him, they're still all in the church. They're still all Christian to a greater or lesser extent. So there's a kind of odd sliding scale of types of Christianity, one could almost say. And that means that for Rahner, someone who's at the lower end of the hierarchy can be called an anonymous Christian. Now, for Rahner, that person may not explicitly confess faith in Christ, but he talks about the fact that their lives might express something of this kind of anonymous faith, and it might look like doing your duty every day, which sounds really dull, but for Rahner that is a kind of outworking of what being an anonymous Christian might look like. Now for Bonhoeffer, that idea of hierarchy doesn't really apply at all. When he talks about these different ways of being Christian, religionless Christianity, anonymous Christianity, unconscious Christianity, nowhere does he say these are one is better than the other, or, you know, he once in his a very early text says it would be nice if we could draw people towards confessing Christ, who we might think of as unconscious Christians. But he only says that once, and then all of his later ideas relating to unconscious Christianity, he never comes back to that idea at all. So he seems to have kind of settled down with the idea that you can be an unconscious Christian, you can be a religionless Christian. Those things are not in a hierarchical setting at all. So, yeah, they're very different ways of coming to thinking about different forms of Christianity.
Yeah, and there's very different motivations behind how they come to think about those anyway, and where those ideas first develop. I suppose, like, when you're looking at the development of Bonhoeffer's thought, like, you read some of his early writings compared to later, and you do see that quite clear development that's there. So how does Bonhoeffer's idea of unconscious Christianity compare to his earlier thought, and how does it fit in within the bigger picture of his later theology as well?
So I think you can see the roots of this idea of unconscious Christianity, for instance, in The Cost of Discipleship, where he has a section called Hidden Discipleship, where he's saying that to be the best disciples we can be, we need to be unaware of our own discipleship. Because the problem for Bonhoeffer is that you're kind of being a good disciple, and then you get caught up in the impetus of kind of going, oh, look at me, I'm doing so well with my discipleship. Hey, this is going great. And then, of course, you start focusing on that, and you stop trying to conform to Christ because you get caught up with how well you're doing. And so this section of The Cost of Discipleship is all about having your discipleship be hidden even to yourself, so that your life of discipleship becomes so ingrained, so embedded in you, that you no longer really reflect upon it at all. And that's really interesting because it matches up with a lot of what Bonhoeffer writes about his own sense of pride and his struggle with wanting to not be a proud person, but still being a proud person, and how he kind of keeps going back to this theme in his texts. And so I think there's quite an interesting tension there between theologically wanting to say we really shouldn't be thinking about, you know, our lives of faith in this way, and then realizing, oh, but I do all the time. So yeah, there's that element in The Cost of Discipleship. There's some other points in the intervening period where he's, you know, participating in the church struggle, and he's really wanting to defend the confessing church against the Reichskirche, the national church in Germany. And in his attempts to bolster the confessing church and to encourage people to be part of the confessing church, he makes some pretty grandiose statements about, you know, people needing to self-identify as part of the confessing church. And if you don't do that, in one text, he even goes so far as saying, if you don't do that, you know, you're not going to heaven, or some kind of flippant remark of that genre, which seems to then go very much against what he wants to later say about unconscious Christianity, right? So there, as well as some clear lines of continuity, there are some points of tension along the way. So we get a bit of both, really, if we look at the work as a whole.
Yeah, I think it's all very interesting, and it's a really useful topic to be looking at, especially today when we live in very multicultural societies where there's lots of people of different faiths. That maybe at Bonhoeffer's time, if you were living in Britain, that would not be the case. So when we consider how Bonhoeffer's concept of unconscious Christianity, how does that impact our Christian practice today? How can it influence the way that we engage with others, bearing in mind what you said earlier about the potential paternalism and issues with colonialism? And how can it impact things like interfaith dialogue today?
Well, obviously, the impact, the potential for negative impact is very large, and therefore all of this has to be treated with a great deal of caution. I think if we take Bonhoeffer's thinking about unconscious Christianity and we take seriously his pastoral effort, which I think at the time was to say to people in the church, you are not alone. It's not only you that are holding out kind of against the tide of extremism, against the tide of fascism, against the tide of everything going horribly wrong, there are other people out there who you may not recognize, but who are also trying to do good, to put it in a really banal but powerful way. I think that message for us now is extremely helpful. You know, if the church kids itself that it's the only body trying to fight against extremism, fascism, and all of those things, then, you know, it risks isolating itself from other bodies that are also trying to do those things. And if we want to be able to combat these things that we're seeing in the world, fascism and extremism, then we have to recognize the other people who are also trying to combat those, right? And so I think in that way, without wanting to go and label people as unconscious Christians, which of course would be incredibly unhelpful, but instead to think about it as, this is Bonhoeffer's way of saying, you are not alone, there are people working for good in the world, that can be helpful for us today. Whether it's engaging with other communities of faith, whether it's engaging with social action groups, you know, to be on the lookout for where else is God working for good in the world. I think that's what we can take from this idea of unconscious Christianity.
That's great. Thank you for those reflections. And I hadn't sent you this question beforehand, but I thought it'd be good to just give you an opportunity and a little space here to maybe talk a bit about your work that you're doing just now around Bonhoeffer and disability theology. What is it that interests you about it? And what are your current thoughts on how they connect? If you're not wanting to share anything just now as well, that is totally fine. We will put a link to the book on unconscious Christianity in the show notes. But for your work that you're doing just now around disability theology and Bonhoeffer, do you want to tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. This is very embryonic at the moment, but when I read Creation in Fall, I absolutely loved it. And I think it's alongside the late theology, it's one of my favorite pieces in the Bonhoeffer canon, as it were. And what I find particularly intriguing in that work is what he's saying around limitation and how humans limit each other. And how God, to put it bluntly, made it like that, right? That God creates humanity in such a way that we limit each other. And the problems start happening when an individual tries to invade or transgress the limit that the other person represents. And so this language of limitation, if we just skip into disability theology for a moment and leave Bonhoeffer behind for a second, often the language of limitation is seen as very negative in disability theology for some very good reasons, because people have used it really harshly to just say disabled people are limited, non-disabled people don't have those same limits. And so that language of limitation has become very fraught and very contested and has been very harmful. And what I'm interested in thinking about a bit further is, how can we go to Bonhoeffer and take some of those ideas around limitation, bring them into disability theology, not in a kind of these people have limitations, these people don't, here's a broad, you know, here are two big categories of separate people, not in that way at all, but to kind of rethink a human category of limitation that applies to everyone and see where that leads us, and also see where thinking around the limitation that happens between people, how we all limit each other, where that leads us in disability theology. Yeah, those are some beginnings of ideas. And yes, we'll see where they end up.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. And thank you again for coming on the podcast today. If people want to find more of your work or connect with you, what's the best way that they could do that?
Yeah, so people can contact me through the college where I work. So Ripon College Cudston has its own website, and there's a list of staff, and we all have our email addresses on there. I'm also involved in a project called Project Bonhoeffer, who are it's a charity that exists to promote knowledge and understanding of Bonhoeffer's life and work, and we have regular events on which are listed on that website. So if people want to find out what's happening in the world of Bonhoeffer, that's a really good place to start. Yeah,
definitely. Very grateful to Project Bonhoeffer. I would not have this job without them. So yeah, grateful for that work and grateful for you taking the time to speak to me today, Ellie.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been great. Thank you.